Welcome to the Nerdtastic in 3D podcast.
It's Nerdtastic in 3D. Oh, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. Yes, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. It's Nerdtastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Nerdtastic in 3D, episode number 23. We are a group of industry, entertainment, animation, VFX industry professionals here talking to you about anything and everything that we find nerdy. Tonight is a very, very special episode because it's just like any other episode.
I was just about to say, where is he going to go with
Which
this
Which makes
one?
It extra special.
Exactly.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's unique in its lack of variety. My name is Jason Carter.
I'm Jack Eckler. God, I timed that camera perfect. That was awesome.
Mine is, and now I got to wait.
You don't have
but
to wait.
You don't have to
I
wait.
Was not on camera when I said
but
my
you were
name.
On you camera for a to. Significant amount
That's true.
Of time.
That's true.
I'm Josh Labrat.
And it's like everybody's got the same filler about how I need to wait for the camera to get in front of me. Josh just stayed in front of the camera. That's Josh. I'm Adam McFarlane.
That's awesome.
I don't know.
So Jason, dude. What's up? How was your week, buddy?
Week was good. I actually I have to give somebody credit for something that is definitely worth talking about tonight.
You're welcome.
It's one of our podcast topics for the evening. We're going to jump right into it. I give credit to a person named Marcy Salk, friend of mine that I work with, who brought up this interesting discussion with me. When you ask a person for their telephone number,
okay,
technically speaking, you need to say, may I have your numbers? Because it's more than one. And yet every time you ask somebody for their contact information, you're like, hey, what's your number? What's your telephone number? What's your cell number? Well, I have more than one. I actually have 10 of them.
I'm going to go on thought the obvious. It's implied, Jason.
No, I'm going to go ahead and dive deep into the meanings of this.
I think you should, Adam.
Your phone number
yes.
is your number. It's the combination of the numbers.
Right.
It is a group of numbers that make up your number.
Meaning
your
that...
Your singular phone number
right.
is the collection of the individual numbers.
Right.
So what I would like
I hear what you're saying.
Is your phone number.
I hear what you're saying. No, I hear what you're saying.
Here's that makes the more sense than anything you've no. ever said on this show.
Boom!
Here's
topic
the problem.
Concluded. Next one.
Here's the problem. That would make complete sense if there weren't dashes in the middle of it. But clearly we're separating by saying, this is a unique number,
no.
three digits,
no.
hyphen. This is a
the
unique
area
number,
code,
three digits.
The prefix is all part of the greater whole of your phone
what,
number.
What number, besides a telephone number, has hyphens in it?
Prison numbers?
Nice.
Touché.
Suck it. Your prison number.
But doesn't a prison
singular.
Number also have letters
Social
in it?
Social security number.
Boom!
Numbers.
No. No. No.
No. No.
Myth
no.
busted.
I gotta throw this out there. Dude, Adam, bravo, sir. You had a fucking Will Ferrell old school moment like I had never seen when he walks
exactly.
up to the, when he walks
what
up
happened?
To the podium.
What happened?
Exactly.
I blacked out.
You went on a roll and I was like, oh my God, he's going to pass out. Josh, go grab him.
But the truth of the matter is technically speaking, if someone asks you for your phone number, you should just give them one. Like, yeah,
no,
there's an 8
you
in there.
Are wrong,
no,
sir.
You're absolutely wrong.
Okay, well, let me ask you this
oh, wait,
then.
By
what,
the way.
What if the person is somebody that you didn't
thank
like?
You.
Then just give them like one wrong number within the phone number.
One wrong number within the number?
Yeah. How about you don't give them the number
talking,
to start
my,
with?
My initial argument was just brilliant. I should just, I'm done. I'm talking
I think we should talk about how the definition of competition.
I will punch your face.
Let's talk about when you have a number that was 69-4 Jack, like I had for about 5-6 years, where everybody remembered it whether you wanted them to or not. Even when they go to jail. I'm the only one they remembered, as it turned out.
Really?
So, sir, if you're listening, thank you again for that late night call. It kept me at the police station until the next day.
My Google number is Jay LeBrot.
Google numbers? Did that even take off?
Google Voice?
Yeah, what is mine's same thing.
The only thing that is out is the area code. It's like 5
yeah.
oh something or 515.
Like, how the heck
mine's
do
like
you
Jackson 3D or something I think I got. Mm.
I heard that Google Wave officially lost all of their, you know, they've been pulling the plug on it, but it officially now it's...
There's no electricity trickling through that cord to the thing. It's done.
Right. Like
lights
it's
are off.
Officially lost all amplitude.
There's no server.
It's gotten
there's...
the squatters out of there.
Yep,
it's
exactly.
It's officially vacant.
The promise of that instant, that sort of instant feed thing never never worked well.
I will say some of the stuff that we use on Top Gear, we use the Google Docs a lot. I mean, significantly for like collaboration, being able to have multiple people open it and work on it and stuff, and that's really cool.
Much like Nerdtastic?
You'll be happy to know that Google just announced that there are 60 more fonts, I believe, that they just released.
What about Wingdings? Wingdings?
Comic Sans?
Well, I want Wingy Dingies. No?
Nobody? What's Christine's? Papyrus?
How do I make my default font Papyrus?
loved Avatar till I got to the fucking fonts in the credit. They fucking splurged on Papyrus. $1 billion film using fucking Papyrus.
Hey, yeah.
Some idiot was able to charge them, you know, $35,000 or whatever, and it's not Papyrus. It's an Avatar-only font.
I'm sure.
Slightly different. Like, literally, you overlaid it and found whatever Papyrus, same font size. There's just going to be a slight...
Just a
the guy's
curl.
Like, no, it's different. I made it for you. It's custom.
So
suck it.
Let's hit a topic that's interesting. Because the current one we're on is not. Basically, that's what I'm saying.
Because number, cut it.
Hey, the opening podcast topic can't always be a gem, okay?
I frankly thought that was wonderful because you're an idiot.
Yeah, thank you. So I wanted to bring up that this week there has been rumors flying around that Hulu, who I don't even know who officially owns Hulu at this point. I've lost track.
NBC, right?
I don't know. I've heard Disney has a stake
in it. But there's
a bunch
of people that are invested in it.
I don't even know anymore. But Hulu is now in talks with the major cable providers to make sure that a person who actually subscribes to Hulu, you have to prove that you have a cable subscription in order to be a Hulu subscriber.
Yeah.
Meaning, if I have Hulu, which I do, but I don't have a cable, I will not be able to subscribe to Hulu.
And then the reverse side, if I pay for cable, do I have to pay for Hulu now? Like, right. I'm proving to Hulu I pay $90 a month actually $110 a month for my cable. Shit. Now I got to pay for Hulu? No.
Yeah,
that shit should be free.
They offer nothing.
Look,
nothing.
At this point, I would be shocked if 50% or more of Hulu's user base is streaming only.
Yeah.
Meaning if this goes through, Hulu just loses half of their profit like that.
But here's the question, though, is these cable companies are going to cover that.
Of course.
So
and
it's
more.
Like Hulu's going to go, whatevs.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And more. They're going to say,
we all just get screwed.
We're basically, Hulu is going to completely sell out their user base.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk about this. For the people who use Hulu Plus, which at the time I think is just Jason. So explain your scenario where you've cut cable out of your life.
I have.
And you've gone to strictly the streaming services that are out there and the internet for your TV watching. So for you in particular, this absolutely is going to hit. And I know a lot of other people who do the same thing. So
what I think will happen is, and I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, I think I'm not going back to cable. That will not happen. It's way too expensive for the entertainment value, and there's way too many other options to get that same entertainment. So I think what's going to happen for me, by the way, when my cable bill was, about $110, $120 bucks, dropped that to Hulu Plus and Netflix, $8 per month a piece, so $16 from $100.
Did you up your internet, or not? You just left
no.
It?
I already had it. It is. I already had
but
it.
But you didn't change that when you dropped. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
So, for me, if this really does go through, it will just mean increased piracy.
Yeah,
it's a perfect move for the cable companies.
Yeah,
because they hate Hulu. They hate people like Jason who've decided to cut it.
Yeah.
So why not make a deal with them to say like, hey, let's buy you out and blah, 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 just to get people back to cable. So, on a side note, Hulu's owned by NBC Universal, News Corp, Walt Disney Company, Providence Equity Partners.
Hmm.
That's quite a powerhouse of people there.
So then in order to even get Hulu streaming on your laptop and on all that stuff, you would have to have – is that kind of the thought then?
It's kind of like the HBO Go thing.
Yeah,
well, that was going to be the next segue. Was that I know HBO Go? You have to have HBO, which means you have to have cable. Which means
HBO. I like though. That's
right.
The one we kept. They just changed our DirecTV bill and they said, "Hey, we're going to lose all these." And I kept HBO. And HBO Go is actually pretty impressive.
I will say HBO has impressed me in some of their miniseries in particular.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones is just amazing.
Actually, each big major cable, except for, I don't know, Cinemax. I don't know if they do anything. But, I mean, Starz, they had Spartacus. That was pretty lucrative for them. Showtime's got Dexter.
Yeah.
You know, Weeds.
Yeah.
What about Turner Classic Movies? What do they have?
They have some Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Casablanca.
Casablanca, exactly.
Titanic 2.
Screw Titanic.
Sink it again.
it's sunk again.
By the way,
risen from the dead only to be sunk
by
again.
By the way, I think this was on ThinkGeek, I believe, today or yesterday. There was a, I forget the name of it. What do you call it when you put a tea bag inside of a device that you can then dunk? You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
If you have tea, it's not just like, I'm going to dunk my tea bag.
But
if
you do, like loose leaf.
Loose leaf, like yeah. So it's like a metal container that
all
will, like...
tea bagging. Yes. Yeah.
It's like a metal container that you can put leaves in, and then you can dunk that.
Yeah.
So anyways, somebody had one that was the Titanic.
That's funny.
That was pretty good.
Have you seen, speaking of the Titanic, have you seen the, again, somewhere on the internet, Imgur or something, which is probably a pull from Reddit, but someone did an exact replica of the door thing that What's-Her-Face laid on at the end of the movie. Like, drew it out on the floor and just showed all the positions you could lie in with two people.
Oh, yeah. It did not need to be that.
And it's like I was talking to somebody, a girl, and she was like, yeah, but it wouldn't have stayed afloat. And I'm like, you could have tried. You could have just tried.
They didn't even. The attempt was so half-assed.
Yeah, it was like,
they tried. It was a deleted scene.
Yeah, maybe.
No.
James Cameron, you
but
son of a bee.
Based off of that picture with them in the different positions and stuff like that, then there was a guy who went and mathematically calculated,
say you weigh this,
the area of this, the wood that's being used, because the temperature of the water,
or European.
Whether it's cold water, you know, is more dense, you know, or, you know, it sinks quicker.
Right.
And did this whole thing.
And would it work?
Would it still sink?
And it still would have sunk. So bullshit. It said that the movie was correct.
Damn the movie. Fuck that.
Hey, so speaking of complex mathematical formulas.
I don't think we are going to talk about complex
quadratic equations.
We are. I want you guys to follow me for something real quick. Now, this is going to sound complex, but I am going to mathematically prove that girls are evil.
Oh, I've heard this one.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So stay with me here. Okay. So we all know that girls require time and money, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Therefore, girls equal time multiplied by money. We also know that time is money. Therefore, technically speaking, girls... Are money times money, thank you. Or money squared. We also know that money is the root of all evil. Which means technically that money squared is evil. Therefore, girls are evil.
You're not going to hear a complaint out of me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to justify
that. I don't get it.
One.
Was that a question, a statement, or just an overall reality to the group that
no, it's mathematical.
They're evil?
It's just mathematical proof. It's just mathematical proof is all.
It's science.
Yeah.
Is your wife on board with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Katie exactly. Hates,
this
Katie
is,
hates
this
math.
Is going to be the one episode she listens to.
Yes, exactly.
Jason?
I lost.
Jason?
Jason Evil?
I lost her at equals.
Exactly.
So.
Math. I think you lost her at math.
complex mathematical formula.
And I get to hear too. And we're done.
So, Josh, why don't we start with you on this one?
Sure.
Something happened today, I believe. Yesterday, there was an announcement about a certain franchise in the video game industry that's pretty popular.
Oh, yes. I was like, I'm trying to think of a list of topics. What are we talking about?
He's putting on the spot.
It came out the other day, right?
Was it yesterday?
May 1st. Black Ops. Call of Duty Black Ops was announced.
Blops.
Blops, if you will.
Blops Dos.
Blops Dos.
Blops Dos, everybody. Dose the Blops.
Dose is 12.
Damn it. It came off my tongue wrong.
Exactly.
I'm sure there will be a Blops 12.
Blops Deuce, baby.
Oh, we can only hope.
Yeah.
Dropping the deuce on the Blops. But
so anyway.
Yes.
Let's dive into this bad boy.
Yeah.
It is set in the future.
Not that far, though. 2025.
2025.
Which, sidebar, that used to seem like that was really far away. Like, 90s, whatever.
Doesn't Back to the Future,
youngest of all of
doesn't
you,
Back to the Future 2 take place in 2015?
Oh, yeah.
3 years from now, I want a hoverboard.
Exactly. Where is my hoverboard?
But anyway, so 2025.
Really, it's just going to be the kind of same thing that happens every single year.
Josh isn't excited. I give him that.
I'm excited.
I mean, I'm excited.
I just like playing
new
versions
exactly.
of the game.
I like to play things with my friends and stuff like that. And, you know, new maps, new weapons. It's... You know, you sit there and you kind of go like, $60 for this thing. But
this is what I'm a little intrigued by, because it's the kind of for those of you who haven't seen it, it's the world kind of nowadays, all military is kind of unmanned stuff. And someone is taking over drones. Everything's kind of UAV
kind
setup.
Of pre-Terminator 2 style type of
so
thing.
So machines aren't taking over, but somebody has hacked in and taken over all of our stuff, and so it's blah, blah, blah. That's why you still need soldiers that aren't on the system or whatever. But I just thought it was interesting. They had a bunch of shots of like fully kitted out modern-day soldiers riding horses and like
we were
this
talking-
weird kind of...
I think that's just
of,
a different setting, like what Call of Duty does, where they jump around in different countries.
You think it's like, hey, no. I can't get in a car without somebody hacking into it, but I can get on a horse.
Exactly.
Right. So I think it's still going to be the same.
Because you can't hack into a horse?
Yeah, it's impossible.
Wow. Deep.
Yeah. Deep.
But anyway,
deep.
I just thought it was interesting. I'm intrigued.
I'm really hoping that as these games, because they're coming out every 2 years, it seems like
no,
now.
A year. Well, no. The sequel to Black Ops will come out.
Yeah, sequel to Black Ops was two years, right. You know, but.
Modern Warfare was 2 years.
Because it is kind of a little bit rehashy-ish, and I can say this for all of our games, like the Halo games, the you know Mass Effect games, anything and stuff like that. The story has really got to you know really capture me for me to be impressed with the game. I will have fun. I will get my entertainment value out of it with my friends in terms of that. You know, to jump into the campaign is kind of a little I'll get there. One of these days.
Have you even beat?
Not yet.
Freaking turd.
I'm 30% through the single player.
Have you even played Spec Ops?
No.
Fucking.
I need to get.
Let me know. I'll play that shit. Have you played Spec Ops?
No.
Fucking.
I just have too much.
Here's the funny part.
I have too much fun.
I don't like Call of Duty. And I've beaten Spec Ops.
Yeah. He doesn't even have Call of Duty and he's beating it.
I love multiplayer too much. I love like I can't get the times when I play.
Yeah.
Are when. My other friends who I play multiplayer are on. And just, to me, that experience with my friends is better than
Spec
me trying
Ops,
to play
I've
by myself.
I've never played Spec Ops alone. Ever. It's always with somebody.
Well, a lot of levels
And it's always
you can't,
with somebody
really.
I've... It's like with one buddy that...
No, you can't. I mean, you really can't. I mean, in Modern Warfare 2, me and Josh tried to hit up a bunch of those, actually.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Multiple times. I was inebriated a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I wanted to quit on him.
You think like, when you get a couple of years in, you're like, I'm going to get better.
I was just railed one time that we were doing over and over.
And
I'm like,
and I wasn't.
Come on.
And it was not fun.
I'm
hoping they do another, which I think they might. I'm hoping they do another like Call of Duty XP experience kind of thing where they offer the game up and you get to play it early and you get to. It was a fun event.
Yeah,
and hopefully Josh this year we can get him to come out.
I'm in.
Since it was pretty much the game, the purchase price of the game, and you know you regretted that after the fact.
Did you get the game when you did it? I mean, that was part of the.
Yeah. And they sent it to us, which was awesome. They sent it to us a day early. Everybody went to the event, got to start playing a day early, which was cool.
That's really cool.
Were you tempted to sell it that night to like a junior high kid for $10 more?
Me, no. There were YouTubers, though, who got store owners to sell it to them a week out, and those guys were paying, from what I heard, ludicrous amounts for the game.
I don't get that.
Just to be ahead of the game, because Activision won't let them post videos, but the day it got released, as soon as it released, they were uploading content, immediately. Which they argue that's their job, and that's some of these guys who make money. That's what they'll pay extra money to get somebody.
Like that's kind of how a lot of that press stuff will work.
I was just I was just happy to have it, and and the event was super. I thought it was super cool, and it's here in LA, so it's easy. And I hope they do something like that again. I don't know how I feel yet. I was telling Jason this. I don't know how I feel yet about the super modern day like. It starts to me, then you start going into Mass Effect, Halo, and plasma rifles. And maybe if the dynamics are the same and the gameplay is the same, maybe it'll still be just as cool. But there's something about using real world weapons that are kind of cool to me that I like.
I agree.
I don't know. It's going to be the same thing. I'm going to dive all into multiplayer and be all about that. But Jason, you surprised me because you said you were actually intrigued by the future aspect of it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think. Adam, you brought up a really interesting point this week, which was how much does setting of a game impact how much you'll like it, your enjoyment level? And it's an interesting question because if I'm being really honest, the Call of Duty games that I have really enjoyed have been the historical ones. Mm. And I love Halo because it's in the future. And the reason I don't really love the current Call of Duty slate of games is because they're more modern. And so for me, I think, Jack, you and I are opposite there. I I have a little bit of a... I'm cool with shooters if they exist in a... This sounds extreme, but if they exist more in a fantasy kind of a realm, or if, like in a historical context, it's easy for me to play a shooter because, hey, I'm justifying part of the war that already existed.
This goes back to our debate maybe about the gun thing even with you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah,
did I go that far?
Yeah, so it's... I don't know how to say it exactly. Maybe it's just like, you know, it's a little too close to modern, you know, modern warfare is too close to the world that's happening right now. And I don't want, I just don't want that. It's too close to reality, you know, and I like a little bit of fantasy. Like games for me is escaping reality. And to me, playing in a modern world, even though I'm not a soldier by any means, is still, you know, it's modern day. So it's that reality
did,
is.
Did you play Modern Warfare 2? The actual campaign?
I did.
Like when you go into the airport and you're just mowing down?
Did you play
Absolutely,
that one?
Absolutely, I did. And that did not sit well.
No, it didn't sit well for a lot of people.
But to the point where, I mean, pretty much killed the franchise for me.
that was what brought you down,
that one?
Well, I mean, it's been a downward spiral, but that was a big step down. But that being said, to Blops 2, love that.
Blops Deuce.
I am...
Yeah.
It starts to get into a world where it's like, okay, now we're in a little bit of a sci-fi, fantasy, Minority Report-esque element to it. Even though it's not super heavy-handed, apparently from the trailer, it's still like, well, hey, we're just enough separated from the reality now where it starts to potentially appeal to me again. That being said, I speak solely on campaign. Still not interested in the slightest in multiplayer because...
hate your friends. I mean, I get
it. Yes, no, I know. On the contrary,
I get it.
On the contrary, at the beginning of the show, we were just talking about how at some point we do need to find a game that none of us have played before, and we all get into
Trials. Four people can play Trials,
but you've been playing it.
Yeah, so awesome. I just think that there's too many the futuristic thing. I think it just allows for, and I've seen another. It just allows for too many gimmicky kinds of weapons.
Yeah.
So if like you. If you're into first-person shooters like I am, where you maybe even take it more serious than you should as far as how you play and the gameplay and how you're into it, when you start introducing futuristic weapons...
We're signing the different...
The world... And this is something like... Yeah, exactly. The world's limitless as far as what you can do, and that can turn into super, super gimmicky crap that people exploit. And then you're right. Then it turns into me, I don't want to play the game anymore because now multiplayer is not fun. Maybe I'll do spec ops and stuff, but it just can be too gimmicky.
Can I ask you a question? Do you think that's like...
Halo to me is too gimmicky.
By the way, goodbye video.
Battery, it's saying bat.
Bat.
Somebody didn't charge it.
That'd be me.
So, you know, I was going to ask, do you think that's
The pressure's off.
Do you think that's the setting? Of the actual game, like, hey, there's bigger weapons means you can destroy people easier, or is that the balance of the gameplay? Because I would argue the gimmicky nature that sounds like you're talking about to me seems like just unbalanced gameplay.
I think they try to make a balance, but I think when you give a designer free reign over non-existing weaponry in games like that, you know, obviously the sky's the limit. If I'm a designer, I'm excited as hell because I can do all this stuff. Now, they tried to keep it in scope of even Halo. It's a sniper rifle. Okay, you know, it's a sniper rifle. Yeah, it looks different, but it's a sniper rifle, whatever else. But then, like, the last Halo, and you guys who play this can let me out. There, the, like, 12 different kinds of grenades I could have thrown down starts to me, or, like, the one you could throw for a force shield, and then the one, the one you do, like, there just were so many, to me, different gimmicks to it that it became too much. And then I think even for your average, like, your average player, it's too much.
Yeah.
You know, Call of Duty, as hard it is for people to jump into, it's only hard because they're not really good at first-person shooters, or that's just not how they play games. As far as gimmicks, though, and just picking the game up and playing, the weapons they start you with out of the box is two guns, two grenades, that's it. And there's no... I don't have jump shoes, and I can't attach a flight vest that makes... I don't have this special thing to make me invisible. Those kind of gimmicks allow... Yeah.
I see.
And two things. Overcomplicates it and then allows for just too much fucking douchebaggery, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Now, I can see the overcomplication.
I don't know if that was experience for Josh, because I don't know how much multiplayer of the last Halo you played, but...
I didn't really have a problem, just because you're familiar with the franchise, so you're familiar with what you like. I mean, there were shield grenades, and then, you know, you have regular grenades, and you have sticky grenades... And or plasma grenades, if you will. And And this is for Halo, I'm saying. But at the same time, you knew what each... You just adapted to it. It's just like, you know, when you're in Call of Duty and you're in a smaller map, it's like a long-range weapon really doesn't work well. So you adjust to learning how to play with a short-range weapon in a smaller quarters thing. Long-range weapon, you tend to get out a sniper rifle. So it's just, it's literally the same thing to me. It's just adjusting, you know, to your situation.
I think for the reasons that Jason doesn't like Call of Duty because it's relatable, I think those are the exact reasons why I do like it. Because it's tangible.
Right.
Because I pick up a gun, and obviously, again, I'm no soldier. I honestly have shot very few weapons, but...
You liar.
There's still...
Secret enemy.
But there's still some kind of tangible thing when I pick up a rifle and I kind of know what it's going to do, and it's just something that I like that's mildly relatable, and I like that. And so a game, like especially a Call of Duty game where you see it's getting into the future, and I didn't like the Ghost Recon Advanced Warf, you know, I didn't like that. I'm concerned about this whole whatever, you know, interfaces on your arm when you're doing stuff, because the Call of Duty games are so, I mean, simple. They're simple games. It's a little map, you know, your two weapons, two grenades.
And for multiplayer experiences, I personally think that's somewhat important. I think it worked for Quake and why it made that so popular. I think it works for Call of Duty and that's why it makes that so popular. I think, like Josh said, you can argue that Halo, to some people, is simplistic. I mean, that's an MLG. We were talking about an MLG earlier, like game type. Halo's an MLG game. There's a lot of people who play the multiplayer very seriously in that game mode. But it made me think, not to sort of tangent off Black Ops, but it got me thinking about, like, the game itself obviously hasn't changed much, right?
Right.
And that's something, you know, Josh touched on that's not the funnest thing in the world, but it got me thinking, like, what if you could take Call of Duty, things that you like about it, what would you change to make the game better? And, like, for me personally, something that I thought about was, like, as cool as the environments are, I wish they could take the physics from Battlefield...
And throw that
into the call, like keep the same Call of Duty movement, how your weapons
destructible switches. Environments.
Yeah. But instead of it like just being gimmicky, I just want the fucking world to react the way it should.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I think if you kept the same, because what I don't like about Battlefield is the movements and stuff. That to me is kind of archaic and slow. If you kept the fast stuff from Call of Duty, but then threw it in that environment,
it
would be fucking retarded. Well, that would just be so cool to me.
Games have come out, and I remember, what was it? Back for the Xbox,
Bullet was a game.
I don't know if it was Bullet though, but it was like that one. No, it was like totally destructible environment, and it was like, you know, literally, I probably would have back then when games weren't like that, and some game where you watch a trailer and you're watching somebody shoot down pillars and everything's falling, and that was a selling point enough, and I bought the game. You know, never that was before you could do like trials or demos on Xbox Live and stuff because it was back for the Xbox. And I didn't even have one, but I bought it for buddies in college. And it showed up, and it was that kind of stuff's destructible, but it's only the stuff we want that's part of the story. But that seemed to be unattainable, completely interactive, destructible environment isn't out yet, isn't ready.
I know, Battlefield.
Battlefield's good. Battlefield's real good. But then there's like, you see where you're like, oh, I just blew up that building has taken like 8 hits from grenades, and it's now like just a shell. And then you're like, but that train car didn't do anything.
Right,
like
pieces of it.
You're like, yeah,
obviously,
yeah,
not designed to blow up, right?
You know, yeah. So they've done well, but it isn't to that.
So
point.
What would you do? I mean, what would you do? And this goes either way. This goes for Treyarch and Infinity Ward as a whole for Call of Duty. What would you? Let's go to Josh. I say, what would you do to the game to make it better? In your opinion,
as far as better, I don't know. It does its job, and so I wouldn't kind of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing. it entertains people. What to me, I think they need to do is they need to start putting in like more kind of bells and whistles. Like, you know, like Modern Warfare 3, how they use the same graphics engine. Like they need to step it up and do things like, you know, with Gears of War, with each one that came out, there was a new, what's the render that they use? Real Engine.
Unreal
Engine, thank you.
It is a real engine.
It's a real engine. Unreal engine. But I mean, you know, they kept kind of pushing that. And so it was like, you know, you saw these new kind of physics going. The new, like, that was a very destructible sort of, you know, world that they were allowed to do. Did it revolutionize the game? No, but it added this great enhancement that you can kind of go like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Makes the game more immersive.
Well, it exactly. Makes it feel that's like what I'm thinking. They're trying.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Not just saying, hey, look, we know you like 2, so here's 2.5.
Yeah. So I would say more of those. And then you're not going to please everybody. You're going
no,
to
absolutely.
Piss off.
No,
you're going
absolutely.
To piss off people and like, this isn't balanced. This is overbalanced. Like, you know, yeah. If your name is Justin and you live in Wisconsin, a Type 95 is not necessarily a cheap weapon to use in the game. Just letting you know that. But I, you know, there's going to be people. You know, like I said, you can't please everybody. You're going to irritate other people. So you know, I'm sure if I said, "Oh, this needs to be balanced better to make the game better." Oh, this needs to do this. But at the same time, I'm talking multiplayer. When you talk about the game, really, it needs to be story. Story to me is fine. Like. Game mechanics are there. You duck, you run, you shoot. It's not brain science or you know brain surgery. I got confused with rocket science and brain surgery, and I was like rocket
brain
surgery.
It's not brain science, dummy.
It's not brain science or rocket surgery.
I tell you, I wish they would take a note though from Halo in their matchmaking. I'm very impressed with Halo's ability to find players of certain skill sets and put them together. Call of Duty does not do this. And I gotta be honest, there's teams we've played I feel just fucking sorry for. Because they come in and we just give them a beating beyond belief.
There's pluses and minuses of that, though, too, because Halo does try to do that well. If you get a high-ranked person and then a low-ranked person, it is kind of like, it takes a long time because it's really trying to find these matches where it's just like, you know, we were playing
a team that's like kind of got some.
Yeah, we were like disparity. All level 15s, I think.
Well, I was
and
that
my
guy
buddy
that
was like at 50 and he joined our lobby and we sat there just waiting in matchmaking because they were trying to find somebody that's that high of a level to play with us. And have this balanced team. And he's just like, I don't think we're going to find one. And so he left. And of course, once he left, we got into a match. Mm-hmm. So there are pluses and minuses.
I think it helps people who aren't really that good or trying to get into Call of Duty multiplayer instead of walking into just a shitstorm of people who've been playing the game since, you know, Call of Duty 4 or World at War or whatever else. So
here, I mean, I'm bringing up the latest, I think it was the latest Game Informer. Where it was talking about the obviously Halo 4 and the multiplayer there.
Jason had me read it. Actually, me and Josh both read it.
And this is what Jason can dive more into it. But this would be my.
He's got it in front of him.
I know. There's no camera.
Camera's not on.
Check the website. There might be a picture. Anybody? But there's like that's where I kind of want to see these kind of games go. Is that hybrid of multiplayer campaign? You know, and it kind of sounds like this is where Halo might be going. I don't know, where it's like you can get four people together doing some kind of something where it's not, you know, 6-on-6 and it's not just, hey, let's just run around and kill each other. You know, some of the objective-based ones, but maybe where there's some kind of more hybrid situation.
Yeah, I want to – well, I'll read a tiny little excerpt from this in a second because it's interesting. But did you want to – do we all kind of answer your question, Jack, about like what each
I'd ask you. I mean, you've played Spec Ops and you played the single player and we've even got you into a Black Ops game before. So, I mean, I'd be curious on your take too.
Well, I will say this. I think if I have to give the Call of Duty franchise anything, it's the stuff, everything aside from multiplayer and campaign, they do amazingly well. Call of Duty, I mean, I mentioned this on the show, Call of Duty Zombies, jeez. Nazi Zombies. Adam and I sunk so much time into that.
Or then are you excited about 2? Obviously, they'll probably have a zombie mode again. They haven't talked about it yet, but that is a Treyarch.
What did Black game. Ops 1 have? I don't remember.
They had zombies.
Zombies.
Too.
I know, but I didn't play it because you
Space.
Didn't have it. Oh, you did? No, did you
I
have Black
know,
Ops?
We had it.
Yeah. Here's the problem is it never found that same level of, like, we had figured out in World at War.
Oh, bullshit.
No, World at War.
You two
no.
tried to get me to play it
we did,
multiple
but
times.
We didn't put it anywhere near the time because was it World at War? Was that
World at War, yeah.
We had figured out the pattern where it was like,
Yeah.
We knew where to stand, and we knew how to make it work to where it was like this.
So once
awesome,
you made it easy, it was
how
awesome.
That's how we did it with Ghost Recon back in the day.
Yeah.
With Ghost Recon at Modern or Advanced Warfare, because you can have just drones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, we get there, and it's like, you can just set it up to just have it be just super hard, but it's just like, you knew they were coming around this corner, so you just lined up.
Yeah.
And what sucked is when you ran out of bullets, that's where you're like, crap.
We earned it. No. We earned that. We took off, like, days worth of time figuring it out, and we figured it out, and it was still, you would still have screw-ups where somebody didn't reload right and wasn't paying attention, wasn't watching your back, and you'd get to level, like, 18 or 19, and you would just die, and you'd both be, like, furious.
So, you know, it's funny, because I think, really, if you look at, I was going to say there's that, and then the other thing for the Modern Warfare games is Spec Ops, which, to be perfectly honest, I have had a tremendous amount of fun. Adam and I, you and I have sat and put many hours into that. But here's ultimately, like, if you really kind of analyze what's happening, there's multiplayer, which is person versus person or competitive. There's campaign, which is solo. And then there's this new genre or newer genre, which is these, they're like mini games that they're slowly starting to expand more and more and more. And it's a cooperative gameplay. Because in the past, in a shooter game, it was always there's multiplayer and then there's campaign. And then campaign also had a cooperative mode where basically two people can play the campaign.
Gears of War style.
Well, that's not necessarily something that's designed specifically for two people. I would argue personally that Zombies and Spec Ops were really designed for cooperative, for more than
without a doubt. Yeah.
Especially when some of those levels are literally you have to have multiple people.
Same thing, you know, I think that's one of the success of, you know, this group voted last year that Portal 2 was the game of the year. And it was that very thing. It was that there's this cooperative, combined initiative gameplay that's starting to become more and more of a predominant part of the gaming industry. And to me, that's really exciting. And that's something the Call of Duty franchise does really well. To me personally, you know, the multiplayer thing, it's not my cup of tea. Obviously, they do something right. It's, to me, it's stale. I have played it a little bit. It's the same thing, like Josh said, over and over and over, and they're not doing anything remarkable to change that. Because why would you change it if it's making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars each game? But it's really stale and really old and boring.
How do you make it better? I think that's my question, like, you in particular. Like, how would you make a multiplayer better? How do you make that experience better for you? I know one of the things you've always told me or you bring up when we say, hey, jump in with us, you're like, I'm fucking not going to come in and die like 100 times. That's no fun to me. And well, I get that. So then how do we make it? How does a company, and this goes for any game, I think, to you guys, how does a company like that that's been out there for years, that has a multiplayer aspect, that has a fan base of obsessive gamers,
bring in
new multiplayer people and keep them?
So I'll answer that question from my perspective, but I also want to talk about the same answer for campaign as well. So multiplayer for me, for Call of Duty, comes down to one simple thing that they'll never change, which is it's much closer to reality. You get hit with a bullet, you're about dead. You get hit with a second bullet, you're dead. That's Call of Duty. You get hit with a sniper rifle, you're out. Halo's the exact opposite. Halo, you have to unload a whole clip of assault rifle, armor-piercing ammo into somebody.
I think that's what pisses me off about Halo. So fucking
but here's what I what I love about that is it means, because what I want to be in a game. I don't want to be spawn die. I want to be in a game. So I'd rather be in a little melee fight, circling around somebody, shooting somebody, duck behind a wall, but I'm still, I may be sucking, but I'm still in the game. I'm not, oh, I'm now in a lobby, wait for the tick, 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 and you're back in. It's, I don't want to be taken out of the game. And that's what Call of Duty is all about. You die, you're out. You die, you're out. I want to be like, oh, I can get hit, but I'm still in the game. I'm still playing. And so for me, that balance for Call of Duty is terrible and will never be fixed. I'm going to move on to the campaign real quick, which is, I think personally, Josh, you mentioned this, hit the nail on the head, story. There is no, I mean, feel free to argue with this, but there is no really compelling story to the overarching story to Call of Duty games. There's two different franchises by two different developers, really, within the Call of Duty universe. The Modern Warfares have done a pretty decent job of carrying forward a story, but it's not anything that I would say, it's like watching an intense James Bond movie. You know, there's nothing where you're just like, wow, that was really gripping storytelling or anything.
But I think that's why I like it.
But I will literally say, top oh shit moment is Modern Warfare 2, the end of it, when you were, like, on the bridge. I was so compelled into that, like, into it. I played through that campaign almost straight. Mm. And it did. It sucked me in. And it wasn't this, you know, they didn't build this huge world where there was this ancient history and it was drawing in this, you know, cumulative thing that Halo does where there's, here's this whole universe, because it doesn't need to, because it's in a world that I already know. Sure. I know it's a modern world. You don't need to tell me the history of this world because I know it.
Right.
And so it doesn't draw on all that, but that still ranks as, you know, and we understand that. Where we lie on Modern Warfare versus Halo. I mean, that's
been
hashed out.
But I think you just
a couple times.
You hit the nail on the head, right? It's all, for me, a great story, regardless of genre, is about detail. It's about the canon behind it. One of the reasons I think Star Wars is such an incredible universe and such a popular universe is there's so much rich detail in that universe. There's countless books. There's countless backstory. There's countless thought that's put into it. Same thing with Halo. You know, there's books, there's little movies that have been done.
It's also because there has to be, because it's a world that doesn't exist.
Sure.
It's a world that needs to have all this stuff.
I would argue that's why it is successful, and specifically to you, is that it's so broad that they can leave it open because it leaves so much to the imagination. It's compelling, and you can write – Star Wars is a perfect example. I mean, he wrote, you know, those movies. These other people, though,
yeah,
took license to an imaginary world that they knew was out there, but it was up to them to decide, this is what I feel happened, whatever else. Whereas, obviously, the Call of Duty, I mean, and I think that's another reason why I like it. As soon as you said James Bond, nail on the head. That's a childhood, like,
yeah,
one of my idols. So, to me, that's the appeal to it.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess my ultimate point with it, though, is, you know, Adam, I hear what you're saying. Like, it's modern time, so do you really need the world painted for you? Yes. I want a world where I'm inside the bad guy's head and I get a different perspective and there's real, like, thought behind the story. Like, I honestly think even in modern times, the Call of Duty campaign would be more compelling and more interesting if there was more thought and detail
Absolutely.
Put into it.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's not lacking and that it couldn't have been done better. But I'm saying you walk into stuff like... I mean, I'm off the top of my head, I just was thinking of, like, the Hunger Games book versus the movie kind of thing, where it's, like, having a game that draws on someone's own feelings about situations and, you know, some of the Modern Warfare games that are drawing on the conflicts in the, you know, Middle East and stuff like that, where people already have opinions and terrorism on the, you know, within our nation and how people already feel about that. You're drawing on emotions that people already have. And so, you know, you kind of relate to the Hunger Games book and movie where the book is fantastic. Love it, love it, love it. The movie wouldn't have been anywhere near as good if I already didn't have emotions tied to the book. And so you kind of, I don't know if this is an accurate analogy, but like I have emotions in how I feel about stuff, modern warfare, stuff like that, like the modern war currently in real life. And so to have a game that is building, you know, compounding on that, I don't know where I'm going with this.
It adds to the emotion.
I don't know, but I'm just saying it's a different. It's just a. I think it could have been done better, and I don't know.
I get that though, because that's what you find compelling, and I think maybe what you're trying to say is something that I found compelling in this most recent one for the portion of the game I have played through.
30%.
Spoiler alert to anybody listening who hasn't played through the campaign: a portion of it where they some terrorists invade New York,
yeah,
and they take over New York. The part they put you into. Is you storming the shores of Manhattan.
Yeah.
Which it to me is done really, really well. And it's such a throwback to D-Day. It's very trippy to be in a modern day New York City where they're having to storm back into Manhattan to take it back.
Yeah.
And it's done really well how you sort of go up the beach onto the street and through that I was impressed. I mean, I thought I was that little section blew me away.
And maybe as I'm
cinematic and
thinking
and
about it, maybe as I'm thinking about it, maybe it is a little bit of a cop out because maybe it is because they can bank on how people already feel about it. They don't need to expand the story enough, you know, like because, hey, everybody loves New York. So let's destroy it and watch how people feel about it. You know, like
let's gun down a bunch of civilians in an airport for shock.
Think honestly, I mean, say if it ruined it for you, I thought that was just. An incredible, I mean, not incredibly like awesome, like, yeah, I get to shoot all these people, but like a video game that can physically, like,
make you
feel
something.
It just made you feel something.
It wasn't like for shock value, I think.
Yeah,
like,
I think it was
they were trying to make you feel something.
Of course it was for shock value. That's exactly what it was for. It shocked you into feeling bad. You're mowing down innocent civilians. There's nothing, like, emotionally compelling about that. It's complete shock.
It was completely emotionally compelling to you. You said it was so emotionally compelling that now you it's one of the reasons you don't like
ruin the
franchise.
Game. How is that not emotionally compelling?
Well, now, no, it had the opposite effect on you than maybe they wanted, but I think the idea of it, you feeling emotional about that, good or bad,
is what they want.
For a game or any kind of marketing.
What I mean by that is yes, a good it was thing. they shocked an emotional value. They forced you into a situation. You couldn't like skip it. They forced you into it.
Didn't they add that, Josh? Didn't they add an option after they got so much heat? I think they did. They did add an option to not even play that section.
I must have played it before that. But my point being is, you know, it's very similar to shock value comedy, in my opinion. Like, are you laughing because you're uncomfortable, or are you laughing because it's well crafted and funny? Same thing. Like, I'm emotional because I'm forced to be emotional, not because, wow, I'm really, this touched me on some deep emotional level. It's like, oh, that's disgusting and I don't want to be a part of it emotional, not like I this is maybe over analytical, but what happens if you had actually had a little cutscene of showing a family going through that airport with their young little daughter, and then somebody busts down the door and starts shooting them, and then now you're thrust into that person who has to shoot that family? You talk about emotional, that's going to get a very different emotional response versus just, here's a gun, go mow down innocent civilians. Anyways, you asked, the original question was, how would you make it better? Hmm. I would definitely, definitely put some real storytelling into the campaign, and I would pretty dramatically change up some of the core elements of the multiplayer. Just my take. Do you mind if we
dive in, we actually
skipped over a topic in the very middle of it, which was, I wanted to talk, get your guys' opinion more on setting. How important is setting in a game? Not just a first-person shooter. We've been talking a lot about shooters this episode, but any game that you play, any story, anything that you guys like, how important is setting?
We can all just say it's important, obviously, but like, where is your preference lean towards? Is it modern? Is it future? Is it
well said.
Historic, you know?
Throw it over to Josh.
Josh
been quiet.
I wouldn't be quiet. I've just been letting you guys talk.
Talk, monkey, talk.
Setting, yes, as Adam said, is very important.
It's important. That's my answer.
When he plays NBA Live, Jason. He likes it to be on a court.
Yeah. And he doesn't like, you know, 1920s NBA Live. You know.
That would be amazing with the baskets.
The big old, like, heavy ball.
But what you're talking about, Jason, is, are you talking about more of, you know, setting in terms of, you know, your...
Look at Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto, the San Andreas versus Vice City. Two very different settings. Did one of them appeal to you more?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to talk more...
Same gameplay, same basic idea. You put it in a different world and all of a sudden it's more appealing to you.
Environment.
Yeah.
I think environment and then also time period. I think those are both.
That's good one. Yeah, time period.
Those are both. Because I've got a, you know, everyone's got a kind of a specific draw, but...
Yeah. None of that stuff really necessarily... is that important to me. I am a little let to go with old timey sort of, you know,
like what was the LA Noir, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption. Ooh. That was gonna be up on mine.
Red Dead Redemption. Like I said, you had to take a fucking horse and took you a day and a half just to get,
I can,
you
know, appreciate the novelty, but
exactly,
good Lord.
But not my cup of tea. Just like with Mafia, like I said, it was a big sort of Grand Theft Auto style Vice City sort of thing, but you were in a car that was from the 1920s that went 10 miles an hour. So it took you forever to get across the map. Boring, snooze fest. When I'm talking about it, it's more important to me with atmosphere when it comes to like setting. Like, you know, I didn't play Alan Wake except for like the demo, but you know, you can draw in so much stuff by just darkness.
Yeah.
You know, by just having this, and it's just like, where am I? You're not, you know, where the hell are you? You don't know. So that stuff to me is extremely more compelling if you have a strong environment like that, you know, and that's when it becomes to me, whether or not that was old times or whether it's in the future or whether it's somewhere else, that to me is kind of the most, you know, important part.
I'm all about the environment. One of the things that drew me into Gears of War the first time I played it is because I physically caught myself in the campaign stopping looking around. Floored. I might even text Josh. So I was so floored at how amazing the world looked.
What year was that set in? Do you know?
I don't know.
The lighting, where the lens flares, like just everything around me consistently had me stopping to look at. And any game that I stop to look in, that always catches me that I did that. I'm like, what? Wow. Did I do that? And even some of the, believe it or not, even some of the, you know, they've been good about the Modern Warfare 3 patch maps as they've come out every month. Some of those even, I've caught myself sort of like, what the hell is that? Like, I'm looking around a little more than I used to. Maybe because I played it a shitload.
So it sounds like you're talking about not setting, but specifically like, hey, someone put a lot of detail into the environment pieces.
Well, no. The setting that it's in. I mean, as far as time period, that's another story. But as far as the environment and the settings, maybe I'm finding I like the worn, torn. Like, that to me is more compelling than just Vice City being in a city. That to me is nothing. I could throw some cubes in with textures and make a city for you. But the ones that are destroyed, they've taken time, or like a time period to be good for me would be World War II, like in Black Ops. Yeah. The setting was awesome, and I felt like that was a great one that took you to that time period where you felt like you were there.
Right.
Which to me was compelling. Yeah, I mean, that, I guess even from a multiplayer standpoint, that's still compelling to me.
Yeah.
I definitely would say, I think that the setting is probably much more important than the gameplay, even. And I'm probably very much on the rare side of this. Like, you give me the crappiest, most horrible game set in a pirate universe in the 1600s, and I'll love it.
He will.
But will you want it to look good? You know what I'm saying? There's games out there. There's pirate games out there that look like shit.
No, it'll be better. It doesn't matter. Like,
he plays Lego Pirates if they had it.
Yeah, like Lego Pirates is brilliant.
On the Wii.
Brilliant. No, I don't play it on the Wii.
You would, though. If it was only out on the Wii.
You sounded so disgusted there. And like, how dare you say I played on the Wii? Someone struck a chord with that one.
You know, like, I it's funny because I think about the Crysis games, and the Crysis games are a very interesting story idea and then fell really short for me. You know, it's this guy with this superhuman suit fighting.
Beautiful environment and worlds if you could run it.
Yeah, well, they were beautiful, and yet they weren't very imaginative, in my opinion.
No, I'm talking beautiful in the terms of technical.
Okay, so yeah, the assets.
You know, the rendering, the, you know, when you use the...
But there's
the,
nothing...
What do you mean? I didn't see it, but what do you mean, like, nothing impressed you about that?
Well, it's... I mean, it's
a very well-designed city.
Imagine...
Like a very well-designed whatever.
Yeah, imagine there's one bit where you're running... Crysis 2, you're running through New York and you're shooting aliens. Yeah, it looks like New York.
Okay, so you're where I'm at with that.
I mean, it's like, okay.
Cities are cities. Cities, to me, don't get damn cool until you start to blow some shit up, and it's only half the city there.
So, I mean, I know some people, like, really are interested. Like, one of the things that was really compelling about Fallout, the Fallout games, were this post-apocalyptic, war-torn, ravaged environment, you know? And I've seen other similar genre games that actually take place in a similar kind of, so it's post-apocalyptic, it's war-torn, overgrown and beautifully green and really, you know, it's very different takes. They're very different settings.
I love movies when they do that.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing for me. Any of the zombie movies or any of the post-apocalyptic movies that show my old reality, overgrown. Yeah. I mean, they do it in Walking Dead. Any of that kind of stuff, I eat up.
Yeah.
And I feel that translates into games.
Those
the
like
same.
Shots of like from I Am Legend where he's tearing through the streets of New York and it's empty and he's driving around, you know, a Shelby.
But we've talked about this on the show too. I think another great example is Assassin's Creed. I think the environment is pretty cool and the gameplay is
I was gonna
so
bring it up when you're talking about like a good environment will make a game for you, and I was literally gonna go, really? Assassin's Creed?
But yeah. But you said gameplay's horrible though, is that what you said?
I mean, not
it's
horrible.
Just so
it's repetitive. Yeah.
Very repetitive. Like if you were brand new to, you know, Assassin's Creed, you're going to love it for like an hour. And then you're going to go, really? I got to climb over that and then do that again. And I got
to
go back over there and
do this
again.
How many more times?
Yeah.
That's what I loved about God of War. God of War was very, you know, they brought in all that mythological, you know, Greek type of stuff. And
it's a pretty game.
At the same time, then you go to hell. And then, you know, you're climbing up Mount Olympus. And you're on a fucking Titan.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, this is so cool.
Yeah. And that's one of those linear games that have a bit more of that button mashing to them, where it's great that the environment is fantastic. Because otherwise, I'd be so bored with the gameplay itself.
Yeah,
because
that's
literally
what I'm
like. Because I will say
that is repetitive.
It's
too.
Like it's like X is jump, triangle, triangle is heavy attack, square is you know light attack.
My short time with Skyrim, the one night, I found myself doing the same thing, Jason. I think it was pretty all encompassing. Where I made it to the top of this hill and I'm looking out and it. I was impressed.
Who was talking about the bunch of cheese that they rolled
down?
That
was me and Josh. You got to watch that video. It's awesome.
I feel like Skyrim, the only thing I want to watch is those videos on YouTube.
He collected as many wheels of cheese as he could, and for the weight of the character, went to the top of the tallest mountain and just dumped it. I mean, when he dumped it, I'm talking about it. It's how many? Is it a couple million or something like that?
It's like, you know, 25,000
or something, just starts spewing, and then it goes down, and then he runs after it. So he's running through this sea or waterfall of cheese wheels, if you will, down a mountain.
How did that not break the game engine?
Delicious, by the way.
They do that with multiple things in that game. There's multiple YouTube videos of guys going, I'm going up against a dragon with nothing but candlesticks, and he walks in against the dragon, and he just starts unleashing candlesticks, and it literally covers the dragon and candlesticks. It's where you just see like something moving in the candlesticks. Wow. I give it to people who find the best in
and
all
how,
these games.
All I want to know is like YouTube video, I want to watch it, and in the comments saying this took me 14 hours of straight gameplay to do this. Like, I just want to know how committed they
worth
were.
Worth it.
To buy all the wheels of cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I had a mine crap and yeah.
So let's and we kind of been popping around here topic-wise, but let's jump back to our, since we're all about first-person shooters this episode, let's jump back into multiplayer.
We tried to get Assassin's Creed in there, but it's just not good. So,
So there's, I'm reading a small excerpt from the latest Game Informer magazine. There's an article
printed
about...
Printed media.
I know, printed media.
It's not even close to
I do
3D.
Not actually buy this magazine.
So in the
I
year 2025?
Getting this magazine.
There's going to be no more magazines?
So this is an article by Matt Miller.
Well, look at you.
So Matt gives
Hashtag
credit.
Matt Miller.
I know. So just a tiny little excerpt about specifically the multiplayer for Halo. Tiny little thing here. So a lot of what we love about Halo comes from the story and the universe. The sense of place, Holmes says. Holmes is the game's creative director, I believe. That's something that has really been lacking on the multiplayer side. You have all your story and meaning in the campaign, and then you jump into multiplayer and just kill dudes. None of it really matters. Halo 4's multiplayer, in contrast, Halo 4's multiplayer ties directly to the campaign. You take on the side of a new breed of soldier in the UNSC military force, the Spartan Four, the continued evolution of the Super Soldier program that helped end the war against the Covenant and the Flood. Don't really need to read too much more, but there's something, it's really interesting to me, and the article is really, really great, but it's something incredibly interesting about the idea of having multiplayer, keep in mind, that's competitive gameplay, tied to a campaign, which is cooperative or single-driven, like single-initiative-driven.
Singular?
Thank you. So I mean, it's almost like I'm really curious. I'm really curious. One, because it sounds like they're very well aware that multiplayer in general and first person shooters has no story, has no context. It's just I love that he says you just kill dudes because that's kind of how my personally I take multiplayer. Period. But now it's like okay, well, we recognize that and we're going to address that. Well, cool. Now you're speaking. I am your audience. You are speaking directly to me. I find that very interesting. And then you know. So to say we're going to give multiplayer more story, more context. Great. Then to say we're going to tie it into the campaign, I don't. What, Jack? What do you think? What would that even look like?
We were talking about this. I'm curious what their thought process. After reading the article, part of it was this training ship called the Infinity that they said in the single player campaign would be a part of it, where either you interact with it or it's flying behind you and different. This is my take on maybe what they're going to do with it. I'm very confused, though, how much further they can push that, other than it being a gimmicky part of the single-player experience where you go through the same training you would as the person in multiplayer, because I don't know how what you do in multiplayer would translate back.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't. All I know is that I can tell you the canon of Halo, you know, you play as the Master Chief. That's the main character. He's a Spartan 2. 30 years later, I believe, came along the Spartan Fours, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But, I mean, you're talking about not the same. You play in the campaign as one character. You play in multiplayer as much younger, much
Right, because what games try to do at the moment, multiplayer-wise, to keep you sort of connected to the single player is take environments from the single player game. Obviously, I'm back to it, and I don't mean to be, but like Call of Duty does this, and actually Gears of War doesn't as much. Gears of War tends to even have maps that aren't even part of the single player.
That's cool.
But Call of Duty, though, has done a pretty good job as far as taking single player elements and when you're in that environment and then translating sections of that. And it's probably for money, right? Yeah. You've already built it for the cinematics and the single player. Why not port it? So they ported it over. But as far as I've seen, that's as far as anybody's pushed that.
Yeah.
As far as trying to like make you like both things.
Because even the Spec Ops stuff has no real link other than sometimes environment to things you do.
Halo do that? I've never noticed, but does Halo do that with your single player like areas? Do they put those into the game as far as multiplayer?
Not really, because there's not a whole lot of
environments you're in that would translate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're two very different breeds of game design. I mean, you're talking about when you design a multiplayer map. It needs to be very specifically designed,
balanced,
and for in Call of Duty, multiple game types, which I'm fascinated with. Like it's got to work for capture the flag. It's got to work for deathmatch. It's got to work.
It is impressive when you dive into the
domination.
Jack, to your point, I would actually think it's probably the opposite. I actually think it's probably something where the multiplayer guys get in there and start designing these maps, and then they hand it off to the campaign team, who's like, "Hey, incorporate this as one of your environments because what the heck, we've already built it." That's
interesting.
I don't think so.
I'm going to make a call. One of the fortunate things about the people we are is that we know people in the right places, and I'm going to make a call to just ask that question. That's a good
idea. I don't think it's like that, though.
I don't either, but I'm curious that you got my brain thinking, dude, that maybe
only
that's
because
just keep in mind about how much more design has to go into the multiplayer map.
And that's true, but
I don't want to interrupt, but don't you think that the story is made, whatever story there is, it's like, we're going to start in an airport, we're going to go to this, we're going to go to a favela, we're going to cut through this. And so that's where it goes. It's not like, you know, I feel like if anything, it's a very hand-in-hand thing where maybe the multiplayer guys are like, because I don't know how much of a separation in teams and how that breaks down, but like multiplayer guys are like, you know, make a great map. And the single player guys are like, you know, make a great part of the story. And so it's probably a bit collaborative.
I think some of it's loose, too, at least that I've noticed. It's not always one-to-one, but there are maps that some of them are one-to-one. But for the most part, I think it's that thing of loose interpretation. And actually, it's kind of odd that Halo wouldn't touch on that more, because I remember the couple times I played the single, I don't even know which ones, maybe it was Halo 2, that I thought they could translate these areas into multiplayer maps.
Which one had Horde? Was that the
Horde mode?
The first Halo that got that, kind of the wave.
Survival.
So which one had that? Which Halo? ODST?
What's it? Firefight mode.
Firefight. Was that ODST?
ODST, yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple levels that translated in that.
You're right.
Firefight.
In that one. But like, with what you're saying with the maps, there's so much detail and time that goes into that because of the fact of angles, of line of sights, and all this other stuff. So to be able to spend so much time trying to focus this when you could have been getting way farther along with the game, just in gameplay, because you have a wider map and you can dictate, you know, where the person is allowed to go and so on and so forth, that would be first. Then second, it's like, okay, we're going to take this area and now sculpt this so that you're making, you have higher, you have lower covers, you have this. And then so that's when the many, many hours and many, many testing hours that could happen of over and over, people going like, this area doesn't work, this area doesn't, you know, this cover sucks.
I hear what you're saying. We might disagree to disagree. For me, it would probably be more of your campaign team has a whole entire level thing to build, and it's a big map like you're talking about, and there's just a big piece that you say, okay, here's your door, here's your entrance, here's your exit, and then the multiplayer team is building a room or a piece of that environment that then the campaign team probably plugs in later. I just think it doesn't make sense to me, and I could be wrong, but it doesn't make sense to me how you would go and design a whole single player room, and then the multiplayer team grabs one of those assets and then reshapes it, and then does the campaign then have to just accept those new changes?
They don't use the same one.
That's what I think it is. I don't think the single player campaign would take anything from the multiplayer at all. My personal thing is I think they create assets for the single player based on what job. That's a good point. I hadn't even thought about it. Is the your field of view, how the, right. the single player keeps you on a linear path,
right.
that they probably model to that. And if anything, I'm sure the multiplayer team gets screwed because they're going to have to model extra crap that they need to anticipate people are going to see that you didn't see in that single player experience.
Yeah, see, that's funny. I took it as the exact opposite. You're talking about line of sight and stuff. I thought that was in the design of the multiplayer. Like the line of sight in the campaign and stuff is less important, right?
Well, I mean,
like,
line of sight and shooting and those kinds of things are huge in multiplayer. Right, of course. But I think from a camera point of view, when you're creating a single player game, you know, it's still polys. We still don't have engines that push everything for us, so you know they still want to limit that. So I think they try to dictate probably as much as they can as far as what you're seeing, where you're seeing now.
Your world has to be much bigger for a level too. That's true. Have to be traveling and you have to be all this stuff, true. You know, and you have to have multiple levels. When you have maps, there are a lot of maps and stuff like that too. But you know, you're in a small confined space to where you have this.
So where are we all at? I mean, I sort of said my piece on it, but where are you guys at as far as ways you could? Well, it could go either way. Ways you think they're going to transition in Halo 4, like what they're thinking as far as integrating multiplayer and single player, and or ways you think games could do that.
I think it's going to be the better integration of a Spec Ops into a kind of thing where it's like it's not these standalone things where in the new Spec Ops you can level up. You can unlock things under survival mode. You get to different levels just like you would in multiplayer. But it's going to be some kind of hybrid thing like that where it's pulling on some of the same story elements, but they're not going to be... Maybe it's a detached unit or a slightly different unit and you're playing through something. I don't know.
So you're specifically talking about cooperative gameplay. So in the article, it goes on to talk about Spartan Ops, which... I believe sounds like it's going to be Spec Ops, basically, which is this third branch of first-person shooters, which is cooperative gameplay.
Yeah.
To me, that makes what you're saying makes 100% sense. They're talking about, like, we're going to have a cooperative branch of this game that basically tells another portion of the story. Sure. Makes total sense.
Yeah.
In fact, the one thing that's cool is they even go into the saying that it's going to be basically episodic. I believe once a month they're going to release new bits of this story.
That's a good marketing strat.
But the article specifically talks about multiplayer.
Oh,
tying
gotcha. Okay.
not cooperative, but multiplayer. How could you tie Team Slayer? What is it called? The free for all deathmatch versus into a
I don't know.
Like that's the it portion.
It would have to be the only thing I could think would be some kind of ranking because the idea. Working well, right, would have to be you jumping back and forth or being able to. Like, if I'm playing single player and then later on that night Josh jumps on and I want to go play multiplayer, but what I do in multiplayer when I go back into single player...
Has changed something?
Came with me. So the other thing I was thinking about maybe is like an armor upgrade of some sort.
So that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Just, I don't know how you make it possible to make it
good. But the thing that doesn't make any sense is it's the Spartan 4 program. They ended it at the Spartan 2. Master Chief is the last Spartan 2 in that story so far.
Correct. They didn't end the Spartan program.
Well,
he is the last surviving Spartan.
He's the last surviving Spartan.
Jason's been waiting for this debate for years.
I don't know.
His eyes lit up. I haven't seen him like this. This is Christmas morning right now when I saw his face.
And that's what I was alluding at. That's what I was saying. He is the last one. So there has to be then a Spartan 3 program.
Correct.
Then there has to be now a Spartan 4 program, which is how many years past, it says... 30 years?
I don't.
Well, they get a whole other Halo game out of Spartan 3.
So what I'm saying is when you're playing as Master Chief and you're playing as this, you know, Spartan 2 Spartan, if you will, in the story, how are you integrating somebody that is 30 or 40 years down the line for a Spartan 4 program?
Well, I don't
know. I was thinking if it would make complete sense if, like how Jack was saying it, your multiplayer character gets integrated into the story. And whatever armor gets upgraded, whatever this, it's like, oh, you know, Master Chief, this is blah, blah, blah. And it's just a character that's maybe part of your unit for part of it and shows up within the story. But that character is based off of how well you've done because of armor upgrades or to personalization or something like that.
Because the sickest would be the jump back and forths.
Yeah.
So Jason, and that would get to me, it would be awesome for me because I want you to play with us these multiplayer games. You would see an advantage to making your single-player guy a little better?
Well, no, I think what Josh is talking about, sounds like, if I'm understanding, is actually you're going along in your storyline and you encounter this other team of Spartans that's now a part of the story. It just so happens that that team of Spartans was created based on the multiplayer play. Not your single player is dictated by your multiplayer.
No, I'm not saying dictating. I'm saying I took it as your character is your character for both, and what you do in either one of those game types.
It's not
is you know. Well, this is what I'm saying. It would be cool if you could would stay with you. So if I do good in multiplayer and I go back into single player, perks or whatever I got comes with me, and whatever I do good in single player, that comes with me to multiplayer. Now, the only way I think they could do it from a balancing standpoint would have to be gimmick crap. Like, dude, I got neon shoes in single player, and that comes into multi, or I got the new helmet.
They did do that in when you got to play as the Arbiter. You played as...
What's that?
So, sorry.
That's
a long answer.
For those that don't know, you know how you're facing the Covenant, those alien creatures?
Yeah.
You play as one of them.
Okay.
The second one.
That's cool.
So you can theoretically tie in your own character in that sort of thing where Master Chief goes off and you have then done that, so you can do that. And what I was saying is my LeBravo character that I'm playing multiplayer in Halo and stuff like that, Master Chief encounters LeBravo.
Yeah, that's the way I took it as well.
Yeah, he encounters LeBravo.
I didn't take it that way.
Now LeBravo is part of your team for something.
That would be very cool.
And like I said, the only way I can think about integrating it, though, because it's supposed to be years and years and years later.
It's not. Sorry, I didn't mean it necessarily like... I don't know this for a fact. I didn't mean that like, hey, you're playing 30 years apart. Not like that. They take place at the same time.
Spartan 4 program is the multiplayer
program. They froze Master Chief.
Well, he was cryo-frozen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Duh, Josh. Jeez.
How long is he cryo-frozen?
Enough years to be a part of the Spartan 4 program.
How many years is it going to take, Josh?
Yeah, that many? He's floating adrift in space.
4 times 10, maybe.
I thought it was like 3 years or
times
something.
Times 10 plus 5.
And he's been fighting for 10 years.
That's just some simple time. And then Cortana only lasts 8 years.
Man, that's some alien style shit right there.
Did
Ridley Scott direct that?
Josh, I think what you're talking about would be pretty amazing. If I could go in and play multiplayer and that have even the smallest change in environment or something to the campaign, I would be very enticed.
Yeah, like how they talk about your character. Like if you suck and you're level 1, they'll talk shit like this is a rookie or something.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, if you've kind of leveled up, it's just like this guy knows what he's doing. He can hold, you know,
I'll tell you his own. I'll tell you where that would really be interesting. Kinda cool. Is in a game that's a little bit more attuned to like Mass Effect, where you are a character, but you have control over a squad. So Mass Effect, it's your guy, but you always have two people with you.
It's kind of how Reach was a little bit.
And you can...
Because Reach,
can you order them around though?
Reach, you were always with your squad.
Yeah, but you can't order them. Like you don't have control over them. Is my point.
No,
like they're doing their own thing, following the AI or whatever. But I'm talking about specifically. I can tell, you know, my non-player character over here, shoot that guy over there. Well, all of a sudden now, if I'm in multiplayer and you're playing this team of little Spartans that then end up helping you, and now you can control them in your single player game, that would be very interesting.
I'm waiting for the stuff where it's like. A lot of online computer games that are those like MMORPGs that happen when you're not there, kind of situation where there's going to be some kind of console thing. And I was trying to think about how these like multiplayer competitive first person shooters would work when it's like you legitimately can gain ground and you can legitimately have skirmishes that are part of bigger battles that if you're not there, things will happen that wouldn't happen if you were. And like there's some kind of just epic war that's happening. Yeah. It's a first person game, but it's just this huge battle that's like that if you're not there and you are the team's lead at whatever, you know, you're their best sniper or whatever, and if you didn't make it, well, I feel like this is just gonna screw people's lives up and we're gonna have a bunch of people that are stuck inside playing video games all day. But something like that.
Well, I mean,
it's like,
World of Warcraft. I mean,
but something that's
not World
of Warcraft. It's a first-person shooter.
Well, it's funny. It's funny you say that. So, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but Bungie, the former guys who did Halo, they're alluding to that very thing. They're working on a secret, unannounced project with Activision right now, and they have alluded. I think they've said something about the quote, something like this, which is, "Imagine a world that continued on whether you were in it or not, but it's a first-person shooter world."
Yeah. That'd be cool, like if you turned on the game and it's
fascinating.
Like, it registered that you hadn't been playing for 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, what your character would have done, it's just like, you had a gambling problem. You lost like 50 of your coins because, you know, this and that. And you're just like, and you just hadn't been playing for 2 weeks. You're like, oh, shit.
Clearly, Josh is speaking of his own character.
Like, happen? This is the kind of thing, like, I don't want it to be like freaking.
I want it to be good and bad.
I don't want
to roll
that.
The dice, baby.
I don't want
life
freaking,
is a roll of the dice.
I don't want the, hey, you got a little bit overweight. You should probably go to the gym and pump some iron, you know? Like,
right,
I don't want that kind of bad.
If
like,
you're not playing, you don't want to be punished
playing. It's like there's like some kind of sleep that you just go to. You're not going to get killed. You're just not in it, but things are happening. And so all of a sudden, and it's, I mean, there are so many problems. Like,
there's good and, yeah.
There's so many huge things
that
they have to figure out.
That,
it's like,
though,
if you're part of this like squadron that's making all these advances and you time out for like 2 days and you're just wherever you stopped, like, what, are you going to go find them?
And people don't like that.
No.
Well, a lot of people do not like the aspect of everybody's moved on but you, because you didn't play.
If it's a great business move. It forces people to be in that world. I mean, I thought of an example. What if, you're with a whole group of people and your objective is to go assassinate this one guy.
Yeah.
You log off and your squad is still playing. They're still trying. And then you come on 2 days later. That guy's been assassinated. His chief of staff was assassinated. And then now his daughter has run away and you have to find his daughter. You know, like this whole crazy story and convoluted stuff could have happened that you.
In World of Warcraft, those guys with the raids. That's why they make such a big deal about allotting like eight hours, nine hours, or whatever they take to do that with 40 guys who have to be there during that time.
I had friends that were like, order pizza, and it would be delivered to my room because they couldn't stop playing, and so I had to go answer the pizza. I ended up paying for, I don't even know how many pizzas, for fucking Mike Blowers, you asshole.
How do you answer a pizza?
They call. Like, he gave my number. They called my dorm room.
Jason, it's brain
science. I had to go down there.
It's brain science.
It's phone number. I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, on that note,
yay.
It's time that we wrap up.
That's a great segue.
This has been the first person shooter episode of Nerdtastic in 3D.
Best episode we've ever had.
Episode number 23. 23? Are we on?
23.
24?
I don't know.
Are we going to do anything
actually,
special?
This is episode 24.
24. We said 23 earlier.
This
crazy.
Is, sorry. This is episode number
24. Are we going to do anything special for 25?
24 is the Carter
family
number.
We're going to rent a car when
it's
25.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, what are we doing for 25?
We're renting cars, and we're going to do a podcast inside a rental.
when are we going to do a podcast from the Top Gear stage?
Do you guys
have it? It doesn't sit around year-round.
Hey, can we do a podcast while continually spinning donuts?
Donuts while doing donuts?
Yeah.
While eating donuts?
No, not
while
eating
donuts.
In a car.
I like that.
While eating donuts is
as
what sold me.
Yeah.
An hour and 15 minutes of
Fatty McGee over here is...
I don't know where we're going to do that, where we're not going to get in trouble for doing an hour and a half of donuts.
Could a tire survive that long?
No, you put metal trays underneath it. You get a front-wheel drive rental. You put metal trays under the rear. You lock the handbrake. That bee will spark and slide around like nobody's business.
All right. Episode number 25.
That's why I love Adam.
Chipotle trays are the best.
I want to shoot. You know what's funny? After this discussion, I really want to shoot to get – this goes to you guys too if you know anybody. I think we should shoot to get some of these people at these game studios on here. I know somebody at Treyarch, and I know somebody at Infinity Ward.
Let's do it.
Let's see if I can get somebody on here to talk shop.
Hey, before we leave, one thing I think we have to do is our weekly challenge. Who's got one? We're rolling over.
Clearly got kiboshed last weekend with my amazing challenge.
Ignoring Jack's challenge last week entirely.
Oh, sorry, I should do this.
Well, it's too late.
There was no video.
There's no reason to bypass it. It was out there, and I'm sure there's somebody listening now going, accepted and completed.
Challenge completed.
So let's go to Josh. Josh, you got any challenges?
Are you really putting you on the spot here, buddy?
Challenge.
Don't pass. God. Don't pass.
going on this.
Effing pass.
Going on this first person thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the challenge this week is to just piss one of your teammates off royally.
What if you don't play with teammates?
You're going to have to.
That's the challenge.
This is a challenge.
That's a challenge.
I don't have teammates, so I can't piss them off.
Jason's like, every game I get in probably pisses everyone.
Wait, I don't understand. You didn't fight so much about not being able to do the last challenge. Was there no issues?
Like, block the guy from from going out of the room. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, just fuck with your teammates.
I'm going to do it to
I'm
Josh.
In.
Challenge accepted because I'm going to piss Josh off.
I'm in.
Jack, why are you shooting your gun? Exactly. They know where we're at. Jack, stop. Stop it, Jack.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Nerdtastic in 3D, episode number 24. My name is Jason Carter.
I'm Jack Geckler.
I'm Josh the Brat.
Adam McFarlane.
Do you see how much nicer and quicker that is when we're not waiting for the camera?
Yeah, if that camera with it comes in.
I'm going to come up with some amazing photos this week for the video. This is cut short.
Yeah, we're going to need to.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you later.
Bye.
See
you. Bye. 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 Bye.